Welcome to Season 9 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back to another exciting season of the Follow My Lead podcast. I am always excited to move into another season, Season 9. It's just crazy how fast it goes. But we appreciate you coming back each and every episode. Another month of exponential growth for the show. We're so thankful to have you on this journey. If you're new, we're excited you're here. This season starts out with an absolute bang. You get the opportunity to learn from the CEO of a publicly traded company who has been instrumental in one of the great turnarounds of a brand that in a sport that I just love, golf. Chip Brewer joins us on the show today. He has served as the CEO of Callaway Golf since 2012, and prior to that, he spent 10 years as the CEO of Adams Golf. So his executive management and leadership experience is without question. I was so excited about this particular interview, not because it's a brand that I believe in and I use myself as a golfer, but because in an industry where many of the companies are shrinking or selling off parts of their business, Callaway has been growing and it's become a leader in the space. And Chip just delivered big time. He talked about the important things to consider when turning around a company or a team. He talked about why, as a leader, you have to be okay with failure and sometimes just embrace it. He talked about what it's like to be the CEO of a company, what his daily life is like, which I thought was really fascinating. You don't often get that kind of insight. And he even talked about a professional golfer that he would choose to play with if he had one round to play. And he talked about some of his favorite golf courses around the country. It was just one of these interviews that I'll remember for a long time. I know many people think about becoming or being a CEO. This is just one fantastic episode, and I can't thank Chip enough for coming on. I promise your commute, your workout, or wherever you're listening to this episode is going to be a great use of time. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with the CEO of Callaway Golf, Chip Brewer. Just a quick housekeeping item. We have a special early offer for our podcast listeners to take advantage of our brand new Welder Leader program. It includes a leader assessment, your own report delivered by a LearnLoft coach, and access to our brand new online Welder Leader course. You can find out more at resources.learnloft.com/welderleader. Well, Chip, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, John. Happy to be here.
When you were first hired by Callaway as a CEO in 2012, Tony Thornley said, "Chip has the right mix of leadership skills and experience to complement Callaway's two main strengths, namely its people and its leading golf club and golf ball technology." What do you think those leadership skills were now after 5 years, and what are the skills that have really made the difference from a leadership perspective?
That's very kind of Tony, obviously, to say that. And, John, it was, one of the great opportunities of my life to get this role here at Callaway. I've been around the golf business for a long time, grew up around the game. I love it. And to be able to lead this great brand, was really a dream come true. But it was a challenge as well, because when I came in, we had to make improvements and, there were opportunities to do that. The biggest thing from a leadership perspective was, forming the right team. And because it was, at that time, a change effort. We had a great brand. We had, great DNA. And as Tony correctly identified, strong people. But we also, hadn't been winning in the marketplace at that point in time, so there were changes that need to be made, and we had to make some cultural moves. So forming that right team and then reorganizing us around, making the right changes, but not throwing everything out and not retaining the strong talent that was in the organization was the biggest challenge that I faced, and you know, something that I'm quite proud of, because I think we have just one hell of a team here at Callaway.
Well, I don't think anybody would argue kind of the progress that you've made in the space. I'm always really intrigued, Chip, by the way organizations and cultures transition through time. And obviously, mm-hmm. Eli Callaway, the founder of Callaway, I saw he said this. I thought it was so awesome. He said about the company, he wanted it to be pleasingly different, yet mm-hmm. just demonstrably better.
Yeah.
How do you keep...
It's one of our adages we use all the time. We call it DSPD, demonstrably superior, pleasingly different. And it's a mantra for, you know, how we want to deliver product and services to the consumer. It's a core cultural element of our business. And Ely had it right back then, and, you know, it's right now for us, for this business, and really I think for almost all businesses. The marketplace tells you if you're getting that right or not,
mm-hmm.
And it's our jobs to listen and to adjust and to rally the team really around truly being responsive and to that very difficult goal. But it's a fun challenge, and when the team does get excited about that and stay focused, and we can do some wonderful things together.
Well, you guys have made such an amazing transition from kind of keeping that core value that he set out early on to, I love this story of right after you started, someone brought a 3-wood or something to your office, and it just didn't seem to meet the standard that you were expecting for this brand, for this company.
Yeah. That was one of the, you know, pivotal moments. And it was, you know, you obviously don't know it when you're in the middle of it, John, but it was transformational for the company, for the team, and, you know, what they didn't realize for me, too. But basically what happened was, you know, I was new with the company and feeling my way through it. And, you know, all leaders have doubts, and there's lots of things going on. And, you know, I'm never going to fail, but, you know, there's certain days where, you know, the mountain looks pretty high, and you're wondering if you're going to truly get everybody excited around the right vision, and is your vision right, et cetera. But I believe in product, and I believe in, you know, that DSPD that Ely expressed. And at that point in time, you know, our furry woods weren't as good as they needed to be. I didn't think they were competitive in the marketplace. The marketplace was telling us that. And I'd been with the company. I joined in March. I think it was roughly April. And they brought me a concept in a product meeting for the next year's furry wood. And I just didn't think it moved the needle enough. It wasn't... it wasn't DSPD. It wasn't where we needed to be. And, you know, when I started pressing on it, you know, they said they couldn't get another one done in time. And, you know, in essence, I sent the meal back to the kitchen and told them to fix it. that wasn't acceptable. We're not going to launch that product. You know, that it wasn't worthy of this organization and the team and the resources. And I can remember clear today as if it was yesterday, the wide-eyed look and, you know, confusion, and then almost, you know, a bewildered smile come across some faces, and they picked up their stuff and left the meeting room and back to, you know, R&D and offices. And I didn't really at that point know that it was transformational, but it was. And the reason it was is because they all rallied behind it. And they came out with a product called X-Hot, and X-Hot was a phenomenal fairway wood. You know, it really differentiated in the marketplace and started the turnaround of this business. We moved, you know, to number one in that category with that product. And, you know, they did it because of the resources and talent that they had. But they also told me along the way that, you know, I basically got their respect because they thought I was right on this, too.
They didn't
really want to make that kind of mediocre product. You don't hire people that, you know, are engineers that could be working on automotive and aerospace and all of these experts. You know, they came to the golf business because they love golf. And they want to make outstanding product. You know, they had basically the shackles taken off and the, you know, challenge laid down and the direction was clear and they rallied around it. And so it got the culture clear on what was important. It also helped me, though, because I knew at that point forward, you know, we're going to be okay. We're going to turn this business back around and become a leader because they wanted the same thing. They really loved that direction. And, you know, those types of people, you know, we can be very successful together. So it started really a love affair between the R&D group and myself. And sure, I challenge them at times, and you know they appropriately push back. But we're all about making products that we're proud of, products that are DSPD, and it's changed the direction of this company.
It's an awesome story. I think there's so many great examples. I mean, you used a word in there early on about failure. And I think it's an important thing to think about in terms of leadership and professional journey. But one of the things that I saw, you guys have a brand new line out called Epic that has a jailbreak. For those no golf nerds that don't listen to our show, it's just a technology that they've put in their woods that make the golf club perform better. And I saw you say about the first version of jailbreak broke early and it broke often. But when it worked, it was amazing.
Right.
And I have to think that your team knew that you were okay with them failing in order to do something innovative. Am I correct?
No. Yeah, absolutely. I celebrate that. We're going to come up with lots of cool ideas and we're going to put our reputations and necks on the line, and on an internal basis a lot of them are going to fail, and we've got to be not only okay with that, we got to celebrate it. Because you know you got to break a lot of eggs to create a great omelet, and every idea won't work out. You got to keep enough of them in the pipeline. You got to celebrate it. And of course, we're going to have some that do work out and that there are winners, et cetera. And, you know, the jailbreak one you mentioned has been a home run. You know, so from a leadership perspective, celebrating that and then also championing it, that's great. That's fine. We'll get it. I remember on that same project, the head of R&D, Alan Hocknell, we call him Doc, and, you know, came down as like, hey, you know, we're working on this. I don't think we're going to get it, or we're either going to get it, and, you know, it may not deliver enough performance. And, you know, I'm like, that's not the case, Doc. You guys are going to get it. We're going to get this right. What resources can I get you? You know, putting your arm around them and continuing to be the champion of that. And, you know, if it's a little late, that's fine. Because when it comes, it's going to be transformational. On jailbreak, we got it, you know, obviously pretty good because it's been transformational. We're the number one driver and number one wood across the globe right now. But it's a great example of innovation. And, you know, although that one worked and it made it out and you see its success, there are many that don't. And that's just fine. That's part of the process.
Yeah. Was there someone in your life or, you know, I know you're going back, you went to William & Mary and then you went to Harvard for your MBA. Was there someone early in your career or something that you can think of where somebody, you know, pushed you and put their arm around you at the same time? Because that's really what it sounded like you did.
I think that there's, you know, several different mentors or, you know, that have had a great impact on me. And it's interestingly, you know, when I reflect on that, it's often the ones that allowed me the room to fail. And that didn't lose confidence in me in that process. There was a growth, a learning. You know, being a leader is not about getting everything right, and people won't always get it all right. It's a continuous improvement process, and it's giving them room to grow and to prosper, to improve. Not being that quick always to step in, you know, stepping in with almost a gentle hand, an arm around it, and just a few, you know, kind words, and letting them come up with most of the conclusion. But I had a couple great experiences with that. But when I think back, it, you know, they helped me as more, if not more, than others.
Yeah, it's a really neat image, right?
To think that
from a personal perspective, whether from parenting all the way to work, that you gotta let people go and achieve, and sometimes what they need is that arm around them and the encouragement to know that they can
do. And it's hard to do, but you gotta let them fall down too.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll get back up.
Yeah.
And you know, if they fall down too many times, you gotta put your arm around them a little bit. But, you know, there's a couple great examples of mentors. The, you know, guy I worked for when I was in the paper industry, Jerry Ballinger, he was just a classy, quiet man, but he didn't overmanage. You know, another guy, you know, Steve DiGiulio that I worked for in at Mead Paper, same thing. Totally different guys, but really found myself growing and learning a lot under their leadership.
That now you carry on today, which is amazing.
I hope so. I know I've got a long way to go and improve in certain areas, but I think there are some great examples out there.
Well, that kind of leads me into my next question, which you've been known to have said that we always have to be getting better. I mean,
yeah.
I've heard you say that a couple times in different interviews and things. We always have to be getting better. What are some things you do as a CEO of a major public company, a husband, a father? You know, what are some of the things that you do personally to get better? And then on the second part of that, how do you instill that or communicate the importance of that to your team?
You know, my issue with the team is actually not overdoing that. I'm so driven by nature to continue to grow the organization, and you know, my issue is that I gotta make sure I don't overly focus on the area's improvement and drive the team absolutely nuts, because at this, you know, we're obviously winning in the marketplace right now. The company is doing great things, you know, and if I'm only focused on the areas we have to improve, I can be a real pain in the ass, because, you know, there's a lot to celebrate here. So, you know, I actually have to have the self-awareness to slow myself down and be, you know, a little bit like I talked about a second ago, a little, quieter and, you know, zen-like, and let that process unfold, and also remember to celebrate and be very cognizant and communicate all of the positives that are going on, because in my DNA, that improvement gene or pushing is very much there. I probably got double helping of that one.
We'll blame,
but you know,
I guess
on
we'll...
the other side, I think I'm self-aware, mm-hmm. and I think that's a very key aspect there. I kind of crowd surf. I'm constantly trying to learn from others. I read a lot. You know, I read a fair amount of books on management or technical trends and such. And so I think that helps me. You know, I enjoy the conversations and with other leaders and individuals that have, you know, a shared interest in organizational leadership and such. So I think all of those help me continue to grow in my own, experience and desire to be a better leader.
Well, it's a question that kind of comes up often, which is, you mentioned about reading and when you do certain things. Most people only kind of dream of being the CEO of a publicly traded company, if at all. If they even dream of it, they certainly don't know what it's like. What's a daily routine for you on a normal work day? Is it, do you start your day the same way every day?
No. Totally different every day, and it's very hectic. You know, and you get pulled in a thousand different directions. You know, it's a great job, but there's a lot of stress that goes with it, and you know, competing interests. You know, a lot of travel, etc. So the adage that I can use as an example: when I went to Harvard Business School, they were obviously trying to stress us and intimidate us at the beginning. But in the orientation, they literally said, "We're going to give you more work than you can possibly accomplish in the hours you will have, and we expect you to finish it." And I'm like, "What the?" And I go white, right? But it's a good example, because the CEO job is that as well. If you respond to every fire, every stimulus, you will never, you'll get yourself truly focused on what's important. And so you really have to be a good time manager and managing, you know, where your priorities lie. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my assistant, when I got here, she was, you know, would respond if somebody called and asked for a meeting, she would give it. And I'm like, "You can't do that, Moira."
Right.
You know, I've got to control my own agenda. There are certain things I'm going to need to get done. And as a result, I'm not being rude. I'm being productive and focused. You know, I'm going to have to be able to
say no,
be polite and pleasant, but also lead my own agenda. And you know, that's a balancing act, but it's very important. So some days, you know, this morning I was up at 4:45. I couldn't sleep. You know, I turned the computer on. I started writing. I started the emails. You know, I go for a quick run. I get in about 8:15, so I'm running late, but I was productive in those early morning hours, so I got quite a bit accomplished. And you know, staff meeting followed by you know, responding to various things that are coming up. And I'm also going to schedule some time right after this podcast to, you know, plan the next few days, so I make sure that it doesn't get away from me.
Interesting.
But it's a great job, but it's a time management, and there are some stresses that come with it as well.
Well, you just I'd love to end on some fun stuff. You know, you just work in such a great industry, and you're doing such a fantastic job.
Yeah, very lucky there, and I never lose track of that, by the way. I've got to be one of the most lucky guys in the world, John, because I'm making a living doing something I don't just like, I love.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think anybody yeah. working wants to find that. They want to find their purpose. They want to find what they're meant to do. And the fact that you get to live that, and you know, it's a neat story to hear your journey.
And I love here. You know, I don't like them. I choose that word, you know, intentionally. You know, I'm passionate about it. And so that's just a true blessing.
Yeah, it's you've been around the game, you've been around a ton of pros, you've been around with Adams Golf and now Callaway. Your top three golf courses and your favorite Callaway pro to play with.
Well, favorite Callaway pro to play with is relatively easy. It's Phil. He's tons of personality, fun to be around. You know, you never know what's coming next. It's all smiles. You know, his game's exciting. You know, he'll hit it all over the map, or he'll hit it pure and get it in the hole. There's always action. And he just loves the game of golf. He loves people. He's as fun to be around as you would think he would be to be around. The only issue with Phil is he's going to give you the needle. You know, John, I'm not your level player, but I played college golf. I love the game. I'm a 2 handicap. I'll hit a ball out there about 260 yards, and, you know, he'll turn around and say, "Hey, that's cute. Nice one." You know, it's like, "God, thanks, Phil." And, you know, he likes the action, so you know you're probably going to lose a little money to him along the way too.
Yeah.
But he's a blast. There's a lot of other ones, but Phil is, you can't do much better than that in anybody in the world. Favorite golf courses, and I'm very spoiled and blessed there, so you got to put Pine Valley in there. It's a great, beautiful track. You can play well there, or it can beat you up because it rewards a good shot, and it's actually got enough missing room. You know, and I've been associated. I've been a member of Pine Valley. I've played a lot of good rounds there. I played. My father is very strong there, and he's a big factor in my life. And we play a lot of golf there. So Pine Valley is probably top of the list.
Before you move on, I told a story last week on the podcast. My worst marriage decision ever happened when I got an invite to Pine Valley, and I just couldn't say no, and I ruined some trust in the short term to go play Pine Valley. And when we teach trust and leadership, we talk about how long it takes to build that trust and how quickly you can tear it down. And I tore down that trust for a trip to Pine Valley. So,
your wife obviously is not a golfer, but I understand the.
Well, I tell people all the time she did not grow up around the game, and she's.
Yeah.
One day I finished a tournament. And I shot a 71, and I played really well. It was a very difficult day, and I got home and she goes, "How'd you play?" I played good. I shot a 71. She's turned to me and said, "John, if you're not going to shoot in the 60s, you're taking time away from this family and your work." And I said,
"Oh, wow."
Yeah. But it's kind of a neat dynamic. And now she embraces the game. And now our kids play. It's just it's just one of those stories that I'll never forget.
Yeah, no, it is a good story. There's several stories about Pine Valley. And that's, you know, you got to balance all that out. But, special spot, and hopefully, obviously, you're still together, so
it worked
that
out.
Trust rebuilt. On the other golf courses, you know, if I played one course every day, probably Cypress. Mm. You know, it's not too hard. It's beautiful. When you turn the corner around 15, 16, 17, it's a religious experience. Great walk. And lastly, you know, because I'm a glutton for punishment, just Oakmont, back tees, bring it on. Try to break 80, or if it doesn't go well, you might not break 90. It's as hard as golf course when they have it firm and fast and rough up from the back tees that you ever played. And I have a competitive or evil streak in me that really enjoy that.
Last question, the one I enjoy asking the most: what's harder, leading at work or leading at home?
Well, I don't, you know, it's not even a real question, because home is 10 times harder. Mm. My wife and I have such a great relationship, you know, been married for many years now, you know, got married in 1989, so we're rounding up on...
She's going to get mad at you when she hears that you don't know how many years it is.
30 years, rounding to 30, right? And that's just a lack of math. I definitely say she can't get too mad. But the, you know, she's told me I'm not the CEO at home, and I'm probably too damn hard to work for. And she's probably right. So, you know, home is complicated, particularly for somebody like myself who gets used to being the CEO at work and has to go home and not be the CEO, just be a husband and a partner in a process. And so that's one of those things that you got to check at the door and manage appropriately. So she's been a great love of my life, and also helps to keep me humble on that front, which I really appreciate.
Well, we so appreciate you making the time and your schedule to come on and share some of this wisdom with us. Where people, obviously, the website, Callaway Golf, tell us a little bit of where people can find, learn more about Callaway, send people to the right places. I'm so impressed. You go to the Callaway Golf website, and not only do you, sure, you can buy golf clubs, but you get, you know, podcasts and shows and instruction. I mean, they just turn it into like a destination for golfers.
Yeah, the marketing team's done a great job of really, you know, bringing energy to this brand and changing the model from, you know, just talking to you to communicating with you and building content and fresh energy, etc. So CallawayGolf.com is the website. There's blogs, there's you know, social media interaction, etc., depending on how much people want to engage. But the company's really in a great spot right now, John. We're you know, leading the industry in equipment, market share, technology. We're able to invest back in the business. We're structurally in a wonderful position without any debt, and differentiating position in the marketplace right now. So for those that are interested in the space of golf and in the equipment world, probably worth a few minutes of their time to look into it.
Well, thank you so much, Chip. We really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It would mean a great deal to us if you'd share this episode on social media or with any of your friends that you think might benefit from listening to the show. We hope that we keep adding value to your life. So until next time, be a good leader at work and at home.